The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor,
Andy, Jim, and JC.
All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started tonight.
I wanted to start off. I just went to the Tim Hortons. It's a new family-run business just down the street from my home. Here. And I wanted to give flowers and applaud to all of the staff there, because it's a bunch of really angry, you know, there you go, Tim Hortons. Really, really angry people that come in like, I want a dark roast, and I want a McMuffin without the Mick part, because it's not and they just go about their business and boom, 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 300 orders, Uber orders coming in, and they're sweet, and They ask your name and they say thank you. And I said, great job, folks, at this new if you haven't tried the Tim Horton there, I'm not sure. I think he's a local guy. Give him a whirl, because I'll tell you, their staff is mwah, Jeff's kiss.
But there is
Jeff's kiss.
Sure. Woody Prime presents Jeff's kiss.
That should totally be a segment. Or as my twins, who will be 12 in May. It must have been within the last year or two. They used to call it Tim Hortons.
Tim what?
Tim Hortons. Because they heard people
Tim
say
Hortons for
Tim Hortons. Yes. They just heard people say Timmy's or Tim Hortons like really quickly. And so they thought it was, even though they could read and they've been able to read for a long time.
Tell us something, Dubs, about you and your child rearing.
That's right.
My kids can't read.
Yes, they can't read. Tim Hortons, yes. So it's important to mention that Footy Prime could be compared to Tim Hortons.
There you go.
Yes.
The parallel is there.
The parallel
we are
is
what you thought
there.
We were.
Yeah. Yeah, cue that clip from that coach, the Bears are who we thought they were. Is that,
yes.
Is that it?
Yeah.
That's where my brain went. Okay, this is Footy Prime. That was JC's voice that you heard there. Wonger's here. Craig Forrest is here. And I'm Amy Walsh. We are missing, for the second day in a row, our incomparable host, James Sharman, who is filling pies somewhere, and Jimmy Brennan. But today, hi, Charlie. We will have a guest joining us shortly. Welsh women's national team coach, Rhian Wilkinson, and Hall of Famer in Canadian soccer circles, amongst other things. Will be joining us to talk about the appointment of Kennett Heiner-Moeller as sporting director of our national teams here for Canada Soccer, the Canadian Soccer Association. So that will be very interesting. But before that, there were some moves that we were talking about. The transfer window is quickly coming to a close, about another week over in Europe. Of course, the local window or MLS window will close at the end of March. So sort of less pressure being felt here. But Ali Ahmed, who recently made the move, and we've been talking about Ali, but deservedly so, because in three matches now that he's played with Norwich, played 45 minutes in his debut, bagged an assist in a 2-1 win, in a 5-0 win, he scored his first goal for the club in a 63rd minute, and then the most recent win versus top of the table Coventry, 2-1, he had a goal and an assist. So really, really bright start for Ali, but maybe more importantly for Norwich is they've climbed their way out of the relegation zone. Craig Forrest, I know you're keeping a close eye on this.
Yeah, everybody knows. I mean, well, they don't. I mean, Ipswich, my old club, Norwich, don't like each other, like at all. So I found myself watching that game against with Norwich versus Coventry. My old teammate manages Coventry, Frankie Lampard. And I'm cheering for Norwich. I shouldn't even say that.
Like, you feel dirty.
I'm hoping Ali Ahmed lights it up and Norwich win and all these things. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I just felt, I don't even know. I have to look myself in the mirror. What are you doing?
Cue hate mail from Ipswich fans all of a sudden, right?
Right. It'll be coming. It'll be coming. But
yeah.
But I am. I am totally cheering for Alion, and I love to see what's going on there. And you know what? If they stay in the division, that's good for Ipswich too. That result yesterday was also good for Ipswich, because if they're going to chase for the title in the championship, that's the kind of results I need to see. East Anglia has not been kind to Coventry, as Ipswich has done the double on them this year, and now Norwich has won. So anyway, Ali Ahmed, lighting it up, loving it. He's really enjoying it.
Craiger, you've been, I mean, obviously your career and then 25 years of broadcasting. Has a Canadian ever made his mark this quickly in whether it's the Prem or championship? Has anyone had a rocket start like this?
Rocket start.
Yeah.
No.
So he's a unicorn right now, Ali Ahmed.
He is. And you know, I have no doubt that they've got themselves a bargain. And the fact
as we talk about,
I think the Whitecaps will be thinking, did we get enough for him? Because I'm thinking not.
Yeah, because you wonder, because we heard Axel Schuster talk about the fact that Ali wanted to make the leap back in the summer. And they said, no, we want to hang on to him, not only because we want to make a run at this MLS Cup, but we want to get good value for him.
Mm-hmm.
So you wonder if they were, you know, to have the foresight that he would land and be so successful immediately that they could have driven up the price a little bit.
Yeah. And then at the same time, it's like how many teams are in for them, you know, if there's nobody else in, and MLS experience still getting better, growing into himself, into the game itself. So, yeah, it's a tough one, but I think we're in that situation where they've, yeah, good on Norwich. Good on them.
I also like the fact, Craig and Amy, that the Canadian men's national team is getting flowers, because this is how good our, like, Ali's been having a great run. We talked about him as perhaps player of the year, right? For the men's team. He was at least in that conversation about being nominated.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is, once again, it opens up that international windows to having more eyes on CONCACAF, on Canada men's team. It puts a little more, and then all of a sudden MLS gets a little more flowers and attracts more players. And it actually, this is the type of thing that can lead to the league moving up, teams moving up, meaning better play. You know, I just shared on our dark web that soccer in the United States, they say
soccer
is now the third most, I don't know if it's the most watched, but spectator, it's the third most popular sport in the United States right now. So it just shows the growth of the game and the opportunities that great athletes can change how leagues, teams, all are looked at and influence that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's all about the perception and the Canadian calling card. And somebody who knows a lot about that and has helped to shift the perspective of the Canadian brand, being the head coach of the Welsh women's national team, is our own Rian Wilkinson. That's part of it. Rian, we're talking about Ali Ahmed and how well he's done at Norwich early on, and the shifting perception of Canadian national team players worldwide, whether it's the men's side or the women's side, but then also from the coaching perspective and the value of Canadians as they land all over the world in football.
Yeah, as Rian Wilkinson. Oh, sorry. Your microphone was off, so I was going to tell you.
I didn't know. West Wales and sitting in a pub in a quiet corner, I hope.
Where's your drink? What are you having?
A water, yes.
Boring. Okay, that's allowed.
Yeah, no, it's good. It is exciting. And it's, you know, every time I go see, I can only speak to the women right now, but go see the top teams play, to see all these Canadians, and a lot of them young Canadians that I either played with or coached, a lot more coached than played with now. It's exciting. It's nice to see.
And what about when you're coaching Wales or you're scouting, what you're hearing in those circles about Canadian players, and especially with NSL starting, you had a number of players on the Welsh team that were unattached, that didn't have a place and have a landing spot to play pro. Do you feel like Canada is gaining ground worldwide, and or credence really in what it can offer to a professional player?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Canadian players have started to make enough of a name for themselves now that that teams are excited about it. It's almost untapped. It sounds ridiculous because we know how much talent we have on the men's and the women's side, but for so long it was just sort of an unknown nation, and it's quite basic. It's rude to say, but I think that's how we were perceived. And now you can see with obviously Alphonso Davies on the men's side and so many of the men's players now coming through, it's definitely becoming more and more known that these athletes are there and they're primed. Usually, sorry, but in Europe, they're being scouted at 5, 6, 7, you know, and they're coming through these systems, whereas you can get a sort of 16-year-old from Canada, 17, 18, even older now, who are fully developed. They're not risks, which I think is exciting for a lot of these bigger countries.
We had an interview with Jesse Marsh a few months ago now. He was at his home in Italy, and it sounded like he was at a cafe, and now we've got like the cacophony of you being at a pub in West Wales, and that's coming through loud and clear. But we're
sorry.
No, it's okay. We're so happy to have you here.
It's a wild and windy day out there.
I know. We really appreciate you hopping on and giving us your time. But before we get to your perspective on Kenneth Heiner-Muller being hired by Canada Soccer as the sporting director of our national teams, because you know Kenneth very, very well. And you both have a very similar background in soccer, where you've worked at a myriad of jobs. How are you doing? What's next on the docket for the Welsh women's national team? I know, do you have UEFA qualifiers in March that are coming up?
Yeah, the end of February and March, and then really quickly, I think I named the team for the camp after this one a week later, so they're really back-to-back. So I've got 3 camps home and away for the qualifications, and then we get into the playoffs again. So it's going to be a busy and exciting year, and it comes up quickly. So you feel like you have all this time, and then all of a sudden the camps start, and they go, they're 12 days now. So the FIFA rules have changed, so the camps are going to be long, which is in some ways really exciting because we get a bigger piece of the development when we get more training days.
Have you got some new players on the roster that you're looking at that are exciting?
Sam, I can only hear you.
Weird.
Yeah.
Okay, I will ask Craig's question for him.
Yeah, I can't hear anyone else.
It'll be a very laborious listen. he was asking if within the national team, if you have any new players who have been brought into camp.
Yeah, we've got a lot of really exciting young ones, and it's such a strange similarity, Wales and Canada, but there's this like generational talent coming through where our academies are starting to work. So right on the women's side, when the sort of, it used to be called the regional excellence programs, the national excellence programs, for the last few years we've established a North and South Academy for Wales, and those players are coming through, and those academies are really competing, not just competing, but beating the big academies. So the Man Cities and Man Uniteds, all those big ones, we beat quite handily. So I think those players now are being seen and being snapped up. So we just had a young 16-year-old playing, getting her league debut for Man United. She scored for them in the league the other day. So 16-year-olds now being snapped up. It makes you think of those Olivia Smiths coming through, the Jade Riviere, who are now established in the WSL. And you think these Welsh players now are stepping up, which is really, yeah, it's exciting for me as the national team coach for sure.
Or a Kaylee Hunter, who's doing the same thing for AFC Toronto, or Olivia Chisholm, who just signed her first pro contract with AFC Toronto. So again, we were drawing parallels between Footy Prime and Tim Hortons early on in the record today, but I think parallels to be found maybe between the Welsh development system and the Canadian one. So back to Kenneth Heiner-Muller. So he's been an assistant coach, a head coach of our women's national teams, director of education and coach in his native Denmark, technical director most recently, which he's going to transition out of, a very successful expansion year, first year for San Diego FC. So that was a massive success. What makes him, because you know him so well, Rian, what makes him the right fit to step up the technical leadership and the direction here in Canada?
Well, firstly, I'm just glad they've made a hire. I think it's been a position that's been needed by Canada Soccer. And so I'm really pleased about Kennett, and I'll speak to him in a second, but equally, I just think this position has been really needed, and I'm happy it's been filled. Kennett has had an array of experiences, which I think is really important, especially in Canada, where it represents a lot of different types of people, but you have to know a lot about a lot to do the job. Kennett is really organized. He's a really fantastic communicator, and he cares. And that is, it's amazingly important. He's genuinely someone who cares deeply about his job, but also more about the people he works with and them achieving their success. He's the reason a lot of people haven't heard of him when he's done so much in Canada Soccer is because he flies behind the scenes and he's quite comfortable doing that. Bev Priestman's team won the gold, absolutely. In Tokyo, but it was actually Kennett's team. He was with them for 3 years, and then COVID forced his hand. He ended up going back to Denmark, but he played a huge part in that team winning gold. He was, and I think the players would speak for that. Just a really top guy, but equally a top football guy who knows the game inside out, and I think will not only represent the women or the men. I think he cares deeply about both sides, and that's something I know that a lot of Canadians care deeply about.
Well, he took his wife's name, right? So I think he's really walking the talk.
Yeah, I mean, I remember us figuring that out on the national team, being like, well, it's interesting. There's no right or wrong. It's interesting, and maybe that's done more frequently in Denmark, but his wife is obviously the head coach of the Vancouver Rise. When he was the national team coach in Canada, she had a pro license and she did not work because they were so concerned about anyone seeing sort of nepotism or any kind of overlap. So I kept trying to hire her because she was one of our most experienced female coaches in Western Canada at the time. And she just would volunteer in North End Soccer just to make sure that there was no gray area. So I always thought they're just very impressive couple who are, my stupid friend, I just think like good people who put the game forward and are really interested in the development of the players coming through, and they know it too, because both their daughters have been part of the system, which I think is also a big advantage.
Mm-hmm. What kind of soup?
Like in potato. I'm in Wales.
Beak and potato, yes. To warm the cockles of your heart and of our listeners. I want you, like in as a position or a person who's been in a myriad of positions yourself, has tons of experience. You were head of football for Project 8 before it became the Northern Super League. What will be the different requirements and responsibilities of Kennett as he moves from a technical director role to a sporting director role? Like, what will be his first challenge that he's tackling with Canada Soccer?
I'd love to read his roles and responsibilities. I think we all would. And I look forward to him being on your show. I think it would be very interesting to know what the asks were. There's a lot of titles in football and soccer, and they all mean different things. So what is head of football? What is technical director? What is any of this? So, I mean, from my end, I think making sure that all the provinces feel represented and seen is really important. We know that there's little, you know, fiefdoms unto themselves. And a lot of times the bigger provinces can be overrepresented, where we want the entirety of the country to feel like there's a feeder system that works for both the men's and women's side, where their young people are seen and the talent is recognized. And that's a work in progress and no one's ever happy, but you have to be visible in that. I think he's very good at that. And then he's got to represent Canada on the world stage, which is a whole different muscle. And I think that's one he's had to flex when he did a similar role in Denmark. And then he's worked in club and at international level. So it's how he walks those lines, representing the federation at a time when we'll be on the world stage with the World Cup coming. So a pretty astute time to be bringing someone in when he can be politically well-positioned for very good conversations that will happen around the World Cup at home.
What about, Rian, as head coach of Wales, your relationship with somebody who's in a similar role for the Welsh FA? How does that work, and how will this appointment relieve Jesse Marsh and Casey Stoney of some of the heavy lifting they've been doing?
Yeah, it's a really an important one because they are the coaches come and go, as I know, and it's a painful thing to say, but the actual thread, the DNA of the country should be rock solid, and it should inform who we hire as coaches. And that has been an issue in the past, in my opinion, where we've hired good coaches, don't get me wrong, but they've all had quite different directions, and it shouldn't change. They should have different opinions, but there should be a really clear identity. We're not a club, we are a country, but there should be a way that we want to be playing, and that's not one structure, it's just a type of football, and that is created by a position like Kennett, and then he plays a big part in who he hires as the coaches. Now, this is an interesting one because this hire is being made after two fantastic coaches are in place. But in the future, I'm sure he'll be a big part of the hirings that happen. And he will be someone who represents those two coaches to the board, who does a lot of the fighting for them, but equal holds them to account and sits in their meetings and sits in what they're doing. And some coaches don't mind that feedback, and some take more offense. So he'll have to, again, be quite political in how he gets to know the coaches and how he is able to, when I say monitor, it is monitoring, but actually it's just being available to them and seeing how they run and seeing what they need so he can be an advocate for them behind the scenes and in the boardrooms.
Before we let you go, enjoy that. Well, it sounds delicious, that potato and leek soup in West.
Weird color, I'll be honest.
Maybe you can try the soup.
You want to see the soup?
Yes.
It's a weird color.
Oh, well, I think it looks good. Nothing a parsley garnish can't fix, right? Which they went in heavy with that.
That's what they believe.
But a personal anecdote you shared with me is that when Kennett was the head coach of the women's national team, he gave you your first head coaching job. And you've been part of the elite player, elite coach program that John Herdman had instituted. That was, you know, Carmelina Moscato is another that benefited from it. I mean, there's a ton of players that did. But how much of your coaching philosophy now was influenced maybe by the early days and the presence of Kennett and being around him?
I think I'm a pretty good mix of a lot of my coaching experiences. So, like, good, negative, all of them. You learn, you grow, and you take on. But something Kennett did and I shared with you because I thought it was just so powerful was I took the 17s. We went to Uruguay for the World Cup. We ended up finishing fourth, which was our tied highest position ever finishing. So Jordan, Heidema, Julie, all these top players were on that team. And I was nervous. I was really concerned and that I wasn't going to be able to do them justice. You know, that first role where you feel like an imposter. And Kennett flew with me to Uruguay. And he came as, he called it, my second, third assistant. So he came to all the, like, coaching meetings. He came to none of the player meetings. He never, like, corrected or added. He just would talk to me afterwards about, like, anything that he felt might be an idea. He sat in the stands for the game, so actually no one knew he was there. In the middle of the tournament, he had a board meeting in Canada, so he flew back to Canada for the board meeting, and then he said, "Do you want me to come back?" And I said, "I do want you to come back." And it was for, so he flew all the way back for one game with one game left. And not to do anything, to just be there for me. And so if I've learned anything from Kennett, like, he gave me so much encouragement, and he showed up, and that is such a big thing. Like, he didn't do anything, he was just there, and that I'll never forget. I'll forever be grateful, and I think it really does define the man that got this job. He's very competent at what he does, but he's equally a really good guy who's going to show up for people that he works with. He's quiet. I think you'll look past him at your peril. Like, he's very, very good. And I think we've seen that at San Diego, but equally his time as head coach with Canada and then back in Denmark, what he did there. But he is, he's a people person, and I think we need that. And I'm so pleased for him. He's so well deserving of it.
Well, thank you so much for your invaluable insight. We'll let you go enjoy your potato leek soup and maybe, who knows, I know you're working, but maybe a cider. Maybe a pint of something.
After trying to find Wi-Fi and finding it at this fairly loud pub, I do apologize, but glad to be able to talk to you all, and I'm on a recruiting trip. But thank you so much, and good luck, you guys.
Thanks, Ree. It's always a treat, and best of luck in the UEFA qualifiers.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, friend. So Rian Wilkinson with some very valuable, I think, insight into Kenneth Heiner-Muller, the man, but then also in a professional capacity, Craiger, what he's going to be able to lend Canada in this new role.
Mm-hmm. Well, if anybody's going to give a, that has a relationship with him, going to give us a good idea what he's like, it's Rian. And she did. And I think we're in good hands. I think they've made a really, really good hire. The fact that he's well-rounded, football-wise, human side, you know, support, encouragement, and knowledge. I think we're in the right track. There's some good moves in the CSA recently.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask, Rian mentioned three positions with different titles, but it seems like there's a Venn diagram of different roles that are all squeezed in. So the three were football director, technical director, like head of football was one of them, technical director, and sporting director. I have no idea what they mean. Do you guys know what they mean? How are they separated if you do know what they mean? And maybe you don't. I don't know.
I think they're like, as Rian alluded to, is depending on the job description, they can be interchangeable.
So but traditionally, though, so give me traditional, what were there always technical directors? Where did all these roles come in? And did they come out of one role? And then someone went, oh, I need more support. There should be this. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, I'll say that the technical director job, if you look at, say, what Jason Hernandez does with TFC, even though there is a technical director who's working there, that's traditionally been like the North American version of what a technical director is, where you're involved in the scouting, in the player acquisitions, and managing the rosters and the day-to-day that way. And then the hierarchy is sometimes the technical director is then beneath the GM, who could also be exchanged or interchanged with the sporting director. I think GM sporting director could be interchanged. You usually have a technical director now who's more focused on like the day-to-day stuff to do with the players and the rosters and like all of the minutia to do with the rules and regulations, your GAM, TAM, all of that stuff, to making sure that you stay above board. I mean, Mark Watson's been on this show and he knows the ins and outs of MLS really well. And he really went in depth in that regard. And then head of football is sometimes then a more overarching job where it's maybe includes the academy. It maybe includes the philosophy of play. And so what Rian was saying is it's a little bit upside down, the fact that you have your two hires in Jesse Marsh and Casey Stoney, and now you're appointing a sporting director. It's been a committee, including alumni that have, and consultants that have gone out and made these hires, and also the hire of Kennett to come in as a sporting director. But that's usually the sporting director's job. That you have a philosophy, whether you're a club or you're a country. And Jesse Marsh has talked about this, like the philosophy of play that Canada's men's team plays would also in a way serve the Canadian women very well, because while it's not apples to apples necessarily when you're looking at the player pool, we have really dynamic athletic players that style of play suits. So are you then, do you have your blinders on? Are you missing out, you know, certain player profiles and things like that? And are you weeding out talent that shouldn't be weeded out? That's a whole other discussion. But that's usually the way that hierarchy works and those titles are assigned. I don't know if that was clear.
It was. And it was also, you know, to what you reinforced was what Rian was mentioning about the kind of the feel, the vibe of a team/federation should kind of like the foundation should be set up. But it's only because I don't know if it's because I'm still new to this sport, as you know, 6 years in, but that always confused me, especially the parallels from federation to professional, because they're not always the same names and they're not always the same roles. So it seems to me now, and correct me if I'm wrong, that yes, there's a hierarchy, but there's so many skills and roles and little parts that are kind of significant to that hire, meaning, hey, this hire is great at this one thing, at scouting, perhaps, at development. So we're going to add that to his dossier of responsibilities. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head too when you said it's a Venn diagram. So it's not only a Venn diagram and a conflation of those three roles, head of football, sporting director, technical director, mm-hmm. but it's also the professional game and the international game and the Venn diagram of that and what you need respectively in each market or country. Do you have anything to add to that, Forrest?
Well, yeah. And just the fact that working with provinces, obviously clubs don't have to do that. And going back to Bradley when he was the coach of Toronto FC, I believe he was the technical director or the sporting director as well. So he sort of encompassed a whole bunch of roles and wanted to have that control himself. So sometimes you get that. Managers, coaches want more responsibility in that role as well. And that's what Bradley did. But at the moment, we don't have that with the coach at Toronto FC. You have these different layers that are doing different jobs and dealing with different things. And then obviously from an international standpoint, his job with provinces, clubs, and the whole system will be his responsibility.
So a million ways to skin a cat, but these things are... Yeah, like, no, but it's... So when you skin a cat... This is very half Asian of me. I shouldn't be talking about this. This is like bad driving, small penises, all these bad
you're drugs. Like leaping into the stereotypes.
You racist.
You said it first. I'm just a bandwagon jumper.
But it just seems to me that this is an ever evolving based on personalities almost at this point, skill set and personality about control, about how they see success at this level. Like, hey, if I can write my perfect job description, I want this, this, and this. I don't want to be doing this. You know, just, I mean, almost once again, going back to the parallels of Footy Prime, I want to be doing this. Well, I should be working on this also, but move away from doing this other part. Yeah. And so it seems, and maybe that's why I've always been so confused. Well, that's just one of the reasons.
That's why I've always been so confused, period.
Yes, hard stop. But it's the international versus the professional. You know, like when I started this, it was always just talking about really the professional because of Craig and Danny and Sharms covering the Prem. And then it moved in because... 2019 when we started, there was no, the Canadian team, we were one of 13,000, Craig. There were four of us at the, and JC at the match against the US when they qualified. There were 13,000 people in the stands in October. Not that cold, probably about, I don't know, 12 degrees outside playing against the US. And they were not, we showed up, we were there. And no one else was. So I'm always confused at where that ends as far as parallels from the professional to the federation.
I think they overlap more and more, you know, that it's almost a dovetailing where they used to be very, very different. And now you're seeing a coach like Jesse Marsh, who plied his trade in a club game. And then there's the appeal of the international game and coming to work for a federation. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's looping back. Like, I think the sporting director role will bring a clarity to Canada soccer and the approach, not only on a day-to-day, but long-term in how the philosophy works, in what Reen was saying, in making sure that from grassroots all the way up to the senior national teams, that, I mean, I think we'll dive into this maybe if it's not today, but another day, that League One is going to announce League One Prairies. So that's really important as well, because as Rian alluded to, Canada's talent pool is more than just Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal. You know, the Atlantic provinces are like, hey, fuck, what about us out here? And the Prairies are like, yeah, it's about time, right? So it's about making sure that the talent there in terms of how you're IDing talent, making sure they have a place to play, making sure they're surrounded by people who are astute technically in the way that those players are being coached, but also that they have an equal shot of making it up to the national team. So it's the clarity of that, of the roles, but it's also this modernization of Canada soccer, I think, that we've been clamoring for. I think it's important that this was ironed out and established now. And from Kevin Blue's perspective, like, it's really, really close to, I mean, it's not a finish line, but you're co-hosting a Men's World Cup. Like, this is going to be the biggest event ever, right, in the world, because it's a 48 team affair. It's mostly in the US, but you know, Canada has a chance now to make itself known, so that the calling card of these players, whether you're on a women's national team or the men's national team, like, Canada's more well known now. So now you, this is locked down, this is established, focus on this massive, massive event. So it's all part of it, right? And the collective bargaining agreement, like the CBA, like, or the agreement between CSB and Canada Soccer, like, this, all of that has gone quiet. But if you've modernized that way, there's a clarity about your approach with the sporting director now. I think that's a box that's ticked, that's going to do Canada Soccer a lot of good.
Sorry, Dubs, football only? Or do these guys get involved? Craig was mentioning Bill Bradley. Bradley.
Bradley Bob.
Bill Brasky.
Bill Bradley was, I think Bill Bradley was a basketball player for the Knicks. Mentioned Bob Bradley.
That's Bob Bradley's brother, Bill, played by Danny DeVito.
Was I going to talk about? Never mind. I'll find it. Something about, oh, just about Bill Bradley had, Bob Bradley had the leek soup. The potato and leek soup has got me off right now. The green. Anyways, Bob Bradley had a lot to do with financing and budgeting and all this kind of stuff, negotiating. Does this have anything to do, like, on a federation level, would this sporting director position have anything to do with money? Or is it a on the pitch, in like only dealing with what's on the pitch?
Do you mean as far as budgets are concerned?
Yeah. Like
respective teams, this goes,
yeah, this goes to, once again, the parallels, what can be, like, Bob Bradley was about money, all this kind of stuff. Does this have anything to do with budgeting and how money is spent and all that kind of stuff?
I imagine it would be a collaborative effort, right? That maybe if Jesse Marsh was sitting down with Kevin Blue, or Casey Stoney was doing the same thing about how resources are allocated and then how much money each of the respective youth national teams get, or these developmental tournaments, that now it's spearheaded by Heiner Müller, that he's the one having those conversations with the national team coaches, but those conversations are still taking place.
Right.
It's not that that's taken out of the equation. That's what I would guess. But again, it's an educated guess. I have no idea. But I liked what Rian said about Kennett, where she said he's very quiet. He's very smart, but he's a people person, that he'll observe, but look past him at your peril. Right. So I think that it speaks to a guy who's very plugged in, who's highly attuned to the demands of his job, what's required of him, but he's very aware, self-aware, but also aware of the needs of others and maybe the intentions of others.
What has your experience? Have you crossed paths, either of you, with Heinrich Müller?
No.
Okay.
We saw him he was with his wife at the party when they won the Diana B. Matheson Cup, when Vancouver Rise won the NSL. He was there. So I said hello to him, and that was it. That was the first time I'd met him. But I knew, you know, that Rian held them in very, very high esteem. And you could tell by the way she talked about him, right? So I think this is a really great appointment for Canada Soccer, and it bodes well for the future. And Rian mentioned also that when he flew down to Uruguay twice, when she was the head coach of our U17 women's national team, she said that Kennett very much stayed in the background, and he referred to himself as the second, third assistant. Again, drawing parallels with Footy Prime, I'm the second, third host of Footy Prime.
I'm the third, fourth host.
Did we want to hit on anything else?
I did want to to make sure we didn't miss part of the conversation that's happening with CPL, but I kind of was in my head last night making a list of all the things happening in the CPL landscape. We had the addition of the Quebec team. We had Valor folding. Now there's talk of issues in Vancouver, with Vancouver and with Pacific and all of those issues. And they, and now they're changing their logo, which they announced. So it's an interesting, one other thing to add is the conversation, the CRTC decision has come down. And we knew this for a while, and I mentioned it like 6 months ago, or about 4 months ago. I actually watched the CRTC decision, watched them give their kind of, I guess it would be being witnesses or whatever, like making their case to, and this is One Soccer versus Rogers. And One Soccer won, and now it's getting to the place where One Soccer could be on linear television, which, as we've talked about, you get a subscriber fee. They're linked to, obviously, they're partnered with CPL, CSB. This is all kind of coming to fruition. But it also just shows you how precarious starting a professional league in Canada is. The geography, you know, and it also just says, where are we? Where do we stand with CPL, NSL? How's it doing? So I think we have to dive deeper, but it's something to look at when you're, hey, perusing the sports pages. These are those conversations that you never realize that, oh, this might be something that really affects the league. And the CRTC decision really affects the league. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it affects it to the point that it can save it, because I think it's, you know, I want the CPL to do great. I want the NSL to do great, but they're different entities and they're run differently. And the CPL had to go through COVID. They had to, then the CRTC with Rogers and Bell, lots of shenanigans, I'd like to say, corporate shenanigans, and unfairly, I would also argue, but they were able to do it. So it's a really, I would say it's a critical year for the CPL, you know, with all they've got going on. And I hope the logo the logo launch is a success, the re-logo launch. There's so much going on.
Billy Bob Bradley.
Billy Bob Bradley. But there's so much going on, and it's just interesting to me that I want them to win, but it's also, how are you defining yourself in the Canadian landscape for sports? That's how it has to be looked at.
Well, a sure sign of success is a revamping of your logo. Like, I don't know. It seems like shiny object, but I hope as well that the CPL is successful. I think that we absolutely needed domestic pro leagues for the men, for the women. So if they can find carriage on a linear channel and that unlocks, you know, some profit and gives the league more eyeballs, then that's a great thing. I'm not sure how much a logo change is going to lend itself to that, but looking forward to it. Apparently, rumor has it that it's going to be red.
The Premier League changed their logo a few times too, so it's not unusual. It used to be called the Premiership.
Oh, right.
Right.
Footy Prime changed our logo.
And that's true.
Look at us now.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I mean, way back in the day. York
United, they've changed their logo three times.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Inter, right. Toronto. Inter, FC.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's so much going on off the field, which is actually more interesting sometimes that's going on the pitch in Canada right now. And I think it's the same in a lot of places, but I just hope that they can put their best foot forward following through this CRTC decision.
Mm-hmm. I think they will. It's always going to be a challenge in this country, and geography is a big part of it. The cost of traveling is just incredibly expensive for these clubs.
I wonder though, like as much as I was down on the logo change or saying that that's not really going to lend itself to too much, but maybe it is. When you boil it all down, it's all about perception. So if One Soccer is out from behind that paywall and it's available to the traditional sports fan, which we are in Canada, right? There's something a little bit antiquated about the way that we consume our sports, or we desire to consume our sports, even though smartphones are available and you can stream all kinds of stuff. I think people feel a certain amount of comfort, like a potato leek soup, in watching their football on Bell or Rogers, right? So if that is the kick in the pants that that sports fans need, and that's like the leap into that circle with the big guns, with the duopoly that one soccer needs in order to gain credibility, whether it's right or wrong, then I hope that's what's needed to kind of maybe unleash a little bit of the fandom that we know is there, but in a small amount. Can we,
yes,
can that grow a bit more? And I think that would be good for, that would be good for soccer. That'd be good for soccer in this country. JC, did you have something before we wrap here? I think we're basically out of time, but did you have something to add here at the back end?
I did. Going back to logo changes and us being there for Canada back in 2019, I thought I'd throw us back there. So without further ado, here this is.
It's so nice not being in the group. You've got these two large fellas finally down below me. It's nice. It feels good. Welcome to the Brian Sharman Frost, Dickie O, Bimo Field getting set for Canada, USA. Actually, a really big game for Canada, and not just for the ranking points.
No, it's just the ranking points.
Oh, okay,
that's the only one. We got to get the ranking points. We got to get the top six.
You were just saying about fans.
Well, we need to get a buzz so this stadium gets full this time, because this is really unacceptable. Not for the people that are here, the people that aren't.
Correct. Free beers next time.
Free beers.
Right. Free, as in free.
We'll be here post-match, a full podcast, breaking down this match and the recent internationals across the world. All right, so that is Footy Prime, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, yada, yada, yada.
There's our regular host, James Charman.
He was also lying. We didn't do Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at all.
Again, all about perception.
That's right.
But I love how Forrest, you're like right into it. You're like, oh no, it's just all about the rankings, very lighthearted. And you're like, this is unacceptable. I was like, there he is. There's the guy I know.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's amazing how much has changed even from then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, your hair.
That's true.
Burns looks so young, too.
He did. He did.
Yeah. The pie business is making him old.
It's crushing him. All right, don't go into pies, just so everyone knows. Mm. Pies will crush you.
Unless it's Tony's. Okay, like, subscribe.
Definitely crush.
We appreciate you. We miss you, Charman. We miss you less, Jimmy. And we'll be back later on this week. We're going to have Jordan Listro, USL champ, and former, well, Canadian, but former member of our youth national teams, I believe, or at least the Canadian system. But that's a Canadian doing well in the U.S. and USL, also categorized or classified as a tier one outfit, right? In competition with NWSL. So we'll get into all that on Thursday. Will we have one tomorrow?
Yeah, we will. I think we'll, Charms is back. We'll do a full comments. Comments are blowing up on our YouTube and on our podcast platform. So the big thing we'll talk about is Marcelo Flores. We'll talk about Jesse's push for a new contract. Those were the ones that were getting the most conversation. And we'll share what our fans have to say and our commenters, because I'm not sure they're always fans. I should say that, commenters.
Yes. Yeah. Usually Inter Miami fans or yes, Messi fans that creep in there. Yeah. But I do appreciate the footy primers who are like, ooh, the comments have taken an interesting turn. That just give us like a dose of realism and, you know, the measured approach that I think we need sometimes, because some people go right off the deep end.
Yes. And a reminder to my friend Dubs, don't read the comments.
Yeah, but I do, because we need them for shows like tomorrow. So keep liking, keep subscribing, keep engaging with us, because we really appreciate it, because it gives us content and we appreciate our fans. So cheers for watching and listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Thanks, Rianne.
Yeah, thanks, Ree.
It's always nice to hear.
Yeah, they're way longer because you're mirrored.
Like that?
Yeah. Oh. Billy Bob Bradley.
Billy Bob Bradley.